Hello, this is Frederick.
Hey, Frederick. It's Suzanne Delbanco calling from Catalyst for Payment Reform. How's it going?
It's going well, Suzanne. Great to hear your voice.
Well, thanks for picking up. I am calling because I have been thinking a lot about the studies that have been coming out around benefit designs today and how they're affecting Americans in terms of their health insurance. And so I just wanted to get your perspective on that. But before we get going, I just wanted to let you know we've got an audience listening in, and it would be great for them if you could just provide a little bit about your background.
Sure. It's a pleasure. So my name is Frederick Asasi. I'm the executive director at Families USA. We're a national nonprofit that's been around for about almost 40 years. Our mission is to ensure that the best health and the best health care can be equally accessible to every living soul in our country. That is regardless of immigration status or race, gender. We believe that health care is a social justice issue, and we're trying to create a more just society. For this, I was running the healthcare work at the National Governors Association, working with a lot of governors and their leadership to think about how they could transform healthcare and really drive towards a higher quality, more efficient system that really meets the needs of state residents. Before that, I was working with industry as a vice president at the Advisory Board Company, looking at the ways in which hospitals, health systems, large physician groups, some payers were reacting to new payment models like accountable care or risk-based payments. And then before that, I worked in the United States Senate on the two committees of jurisdiction that over healthcare. I had a very strong role in the writing of the Affordable Care Act, a lot of the payment and delivery system reforms that were included in the ACA, as well as all of the coverage expansions.
Well, that's a perfect background for the discussion I wanted to have, because obviously you've been thinking a lot about how do we make sure that Americans have coverage for healthcare, and then, you know, once they have it, how do we make sure it works well for them? So, you know, I pay attention to the news, and, you know, many of our members at CPR have invested in high deductible health plan strategies, trying to find ways to keep healthcare affordable and also, you know, engage the members of their population more in making smart choices in healthcare. But, you know, some of the studies have shown that they have some unintended consequences. You know, people tend to refrain from seeking care if they have to spend their own money out of their pocket, or they might not even have the money in their savings account to be able to cover the deductible. So I'm just curious, from your perspective, you know, what aspects of today's healthcare insurance benefit designs are putting the greatest strain on families? And maybe I'll add to that, you know, after, and ask you about what is working.
Well, one thing we know for sure is that the overall cost of health insurance is overwhelming America's families. And that's not a blue state, red state issue. It's across the country in every single city and every single state. What we know is that families keep reporting that their health care costs, which include their premiums, their health insurance premiums, are really stymieing their efforts to live the life that they want to live, the kind of house they live in, the kind of car they buy, that sort of thing. So those costs are really one of the most important issues. As you point out, for most Americans get their health insurance coverage from their employers before they turn 65 and get it from Medicare. And for those folks, I think one of the biggest concerns is the kinds of trade-offs, as you were pointing out, that employers have to make in order to be able to control their healthcare costs, but to still offer benefits to their employees. So one of the things we've seen over the last 10 years is a real slow decline in the value of the health insurance offered by employers. So a movement to high deductible health plans lowers total premium costs both to the employee and the employer, but it exposes the families to greater out-of-pocket costs through deductibles or cost sharing. And so that's a really significant concern. And I think there's a lot of approaches to try to address that. You know, one of the best examples of doing this in a smart way, which is really thinking about the cost that families and employees have to bear on health insurance, is value-based insurance design, where you focus on, for example, you know, that medication is going to help control that person's high blood pressure. We want to make sure that they don't have a really high out-of-pocket cost associated with that, because that would be a major disincentive. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely it does. You know, from a consumer advocate perspective, do you think it will be acceptable to Americans to sort of, you know, tweak with the amount of coverage that they get depending on, you know, someone else's judgment about what's valuable and what's not valuable to them?
Well, I think that there's a couple different dynamics at play. One, if the entire ESI, employer-sponsored insurance market, is slowly slipping in actuarial values, it's going to happen, and the American public's just going to probably have to live with it, because there's It's just year after year, a slow increase in the amount of out-of-pocket costs they have. With regard to value-based insurance design, if it's a way to slow the progression of lower and lower actuarial value plans, and it's explained well to employees, you know, we're trying to make sure that the healthcare that's going to get you better is being fully covered, and there may be more out-of-pocket when things are less, when it's less certain. It's a lot of hard messaging. It's a really good question. I don't think we know for sure, but if we tie it to the idea that employers are trying to provide the highest value health insurance possible, I think that's the best way forward. As everyone knows, right now, health insurance and healthcare remains a super political issue. And it was a big part of the 2016 presidential election. It's, according to pollsters, the number one issue for this cycle, the 2018 cycle. And I think there's confusion out there in the media often about what it is that families need. There's no disagreement. And families that are, you know, very Democratic or live in very Democratic states, and families who are very Republican or live in very Republican states, are all saying the same thing. There's no confusion. What they want is to be able to get access to high quality care and spend less on health insurance and health care. That's for everyone, every family in the country. So one of the things that really concerns us is that there's been a movement both by leadership, Republican leadership in Congress and the Trump administration, to try to offer people lower premiums by offering coverage that is very incomplete. The so-called association health plans or the so-called short-term plans. So this is kind of a loophole that they're trying to exploit to allow plans that aren't comprehensive. These plans, short-term plans and association health plans, aren't required to provide the full range of services that folks might need, which means it opens up families to even more financial risk. So that's the development we're most concerned about, the idea that we're going back to the days before the Affordable Care Act where insurance companies could play games with consumers, not cover a whole sets of needed care, or create very biased exclusions that make it very hard for people who, say, for example, have pre-existing conditions to be able to access and afford health insurance coverage. That's a trend we're really, really concerned about.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting is that Americans are showing that they are willing to make trade-offs. You know, they do want care to be more affordable, but whereas we used to think it was sort of un-American to restrict their choice of healthcare providers, I think we've seen on the exchanges as well as just in the uptick of, you know, narrow network plans and selection of ACO products that are offered as an insurance option, you know, that they're, Americans are willing to have some restrictions on which providers they can go to if it means, you know, lower premiums or lower out-of-pocket costs. And so if they can be educated about these trade-offs, I think, you know, that's sort of one of the points you're making, then they may make the right decisions in terms of, you know, getting better value for themselves and, you know, and in our members' perspective, you know, for the employer. Let me ask a slightly different question. I mean, you know, Families USA is based in D.C. You guys get involved in policy. You know, what are some of the most important changes that Families USA is pushing that could help improve the value of healthcare for consumers?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, so we have two dimensions we work on. One is the national level. We're in D.C. We work very closely with Congress, with the administration, with other health policy groups to really push forward an agenda that is going to meet the needs of families. We also help to start a lot of the state healthcare advocacy groups around the country, helping to support the folks who are fighting for better healthcare for all on the state level. And I think what we're seeing, there's a couple really powerful trends we're seeing right now, very specific issues. The first is around prescription drug costs. There's a lot of interest both on the Hill from a lot of the folks right now who are running for either as incumbents or as candidates in the national elections this fall, and tons of energy in the state capitals on the cost of prescription drug to consumers. And it's a really fascinating issue because in essence, what people are reacting to is, you know, I need my insulin and I'm going, and for some reason, it's tripling in price every year. And what we know what that reason is. It's because these pharmaceutical companies are often for profit. They have to report their earnings. They're publicly traded. And the drive towards better earnings every quarter means we got to figure out a way to make more money. And one way to do that is just continue to increase price because of either a monopoly through their patents or the fact that they're the only ones currently are producing a drug. And that happens often with the generic companies. So it's a huge problem. And so we're seeing a lot of movement right now and a lot of discussion about this. And it, a lot of it on the state level really attaches to let's get much more transparency about how these prices are being set, why they're being set at a certain level. Let's have a trigger if for some reason they're going up too quickly so that the company has to come in and justify that price increase. And we're looking at some work going on in the administration right now and a lot of discussion in Congress about trying to support those efforts. Now, ultimately, the problem with prescription drugs is the reason that drug companies can charge so much is because they get an exclusive patent for many, many years, and they often extend it through sort of some games, some legal games, for, you know, over a decade. That patent gives them a monopoly. And so the core solution here is Congress has to come back and look at that. Congress is the only one. It's a federal law, so they're the only ones who can really address how should these patents be shaped so that we make sure that we're incentivizing innovation, but we're not allowing drug companies to just take advantage and charge people, really astronomical and what many people would say is unethical prices just because they can. But, you know, another interesting wrinkle in this is this idea that what consumers are reacting to is the price they pay when they walk into their local CVS or Walgreens or whatever pharmacy it might be. But the truth of the matter is, and we actually see this in polling, lots of folks will report that prescription drugs aren't a problem for them because they don't really take them. They might be young, they might not have any chronic illness for which they need to take the drugs. But what they're not realizing is that annual increase in prescription drug costs is costing them money. It's baked into their health insurance premiums, and their employers are certainly seeing that. So if their premiums have gone up by a couple thousand dollars this year, about, I think last year, about 15 to 17% of increases overall were due to pharmaceutical pricing. So that means, you know, $400 of that increases for prescription drugs that they may not even be taking, right? And so it's a good example of how we have to do a much better job of helping all our families across country understand that healthcare costs, because they're addressed through health insurance, everyone's sharing in those costs. So creating much more visibility into the idea that you may not be getting hospital care, but if your hospital is charging your insurance company or your employer a big increase, you're going to feel it because that gets baked into your premium costs. So that's one really big trend we're seeing. Another big trend we're seeing is around surprise billing. And this is a problem for folks, for employers and for their employees and folks who are getting coverage on exchanges. And that's, you know, people are trying to do the right thing. What they're expecting from their health insurance is financial security. I'll pay my premiums every month. If I get sick, I'll get care and it won't bankrupt me. Well, we see people going in all the time. They're going to get surgery. They're going to get treatments. And they find out that all of the care or some of the care isn't in network, which means all of a sudden they're subject to pretty much any price that the provider wants to charge because they're not under contract. And then, you know, the most egregious examples are folks who say they're in a car accident and they get taken to the hospital. The hospital's in network. They get surgery, but it turns out that the anesthesiologist is out of network. And now they owe thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars simply because of this technicality. So that's another issue that's got a lot of energy on the state level, and we're also seeing a lot of energy on the national level. And it's as important for employers and folks getting employer-sponsored coverage as it is for folks who are buying individual coverage.
Yeah, that's exactly where my mind was going. These two topics that you raised are ones that are very high on the list of concerns for our members. I like to think of employers and other big healthcare purchasers as sort of the aggregated voice of the consumer. So there's a lot of shared concern and shared needs on both sides. So
absolutely.
I really thank you for taking the time to talk today. It's great to get your perspective. I always learn something when I talk to you, and we'll have to stay in touch on these really important issues. Thanks so much.
That sounds great. You bet.